You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. House of All Marine Radio, broadcasting live from Liversedge Hall, named after Harry the Horse, Olympic shot putter, Marine officer, commanded 28th Marines Regiment when they went up the hill at Mount Suribachi, and lo, 74 years later, we finally get it right. Who actually did that stuff, so just shows it's never a bad time to do the right thing and get it right. So anyway, good morning to everybody. Good Friday morning, the first day of November, for God's sakes. Straight up winter. So welcome to the House of All Marine Radio, quickly becoming the House of Post-Traumatic Winning. And that's all right by me. The cool day yesterday, got a chance to go do an office visit with General Mullen, Major General Bill Mullen. So he's the head of training in the Marine Corps, so had an interesting conversation with him about training and about you know, it was interesting to listen to his observations about where some of these problems stem from and whatnot. So, but he's been a supporter, and I think I mentioned just on the program, he's been a supporter of All Marine Radio, not All Marine Radio, but Post-Traumatic Winning, since he saw it at the General Officer Symposium. And every time I've done it in Quantico, he has showed up and made time on his calendar to introduce Post-Traumatic Winning, which is incredibly flattering. He's obviously a busy guy, but he makes time. And to come and talk to people that are going to lead. And the program that I spoke to here, it's called Cornerstone, designed for lieutenant colonels and colonels who will go out and take over battalions and regiments, their sergeant majors, and their spouses. That's what the program's designed for. So, yeah, so it's so yesterday there was that entire group at the event, which is very cool. Which is very cool. And so one of the things that happened yesterday for the first time that I'd never seen happen is there's some things I say, and so it's interesting, you know, when spouses are sitting there, right? And so one of the things I say is, you know, officers are the worst, and it's true, and they know it. You know, because they're in charge, they think that they're supposed to fake it. And there's an appropriate time, you know, to set your jaw and not to be emotional. And in public at memorial services and things like that, I mean, I think we all understand that. You try to, you know, hold it together. But that doesn't apply to the rest of your life, right? But too often it does. So I said, you know, officers, I mean, they fake it. And I said, and it's always interesting when I do this with spouses because spouses get it like that. Because they see it. They know we're faking it. They see how much we're hurting. And I said, so as I say that, it seemed like half a dozen heads in the room turned. But they didn't turn like full 90 degrees. They just turned like about 45 degrees and their husbands, right? Don't make eye contact. Right? Because, you know, the words they don't want to hear, right? The three words they don't want to hear, we got to talk, right? Got it is a single word, by the way. I know it's got to, but all you English dictionary dorks, that's not how we speak the words. So anyway... So then I go on, and then, you know, I show a video from the series The Pacific. I show a little clip where Eugene Sledge had come back from the war, and he's going to go hunting with his father, and the thought of shooting something and see it struggle is terrifying for him. But he doesn't want to disappoint his dad, so he goes reluctantly, and all of his body mannerisms, from getting out of the truck to walking with his dad, behind his dad, as his dad's so excited to go hunting with his son again, something they did all the time when, you know, they grew up. And then he, all of a sudden, he falls to his knees and he's crying, and his dad comes up, and his dad kind of puts his arms around his head. I don't know who plays Sledge in the movie. The actor, right? I mean, the way he contorts his face is indicative of what's inside. And it's really a great scene. And if you have that in your life, you look at that and you say, that's it. That's what's inside. Well, that's what we're faking it, right? And again, it's okay to fake it in public, you know, and all that. Because, you know, I think there's a certain amount as a leader that you do because you don't want to, you know, especially in public. I was at one memorial service in Fallujah. And I mean, it was bad. I mean, the unit hadn't been there they were not even done with their RIP, which is you get there, right? You follow the unit that owns that battle space that you're taking over. You follow them around for a week. Then they follow you around for a week and then they leave. Well, they weren't even complete with that. They were in the final phases of that where the unit they were taking over wasn't going out with them anymore, but they were still kind of observing from the COC and, you know, helping with debriefs and things like that. They had three Marines and a Humvee. One had played football at the University of Kentucky. Another one had lost like 150 pounds to join the Marine Corps. And I can't remember the third one, but they rolled over an IED and all three of them were killed. And at the memorial service, there was one Marine who was just sobbing and sobbing and just kept saying why. And honestly, it was inappropriate, right? Everybody's struck with grief, okay? But that is not the time nor the place for you to go ballistic emotionally, right? And they should have taken him outside. Hey. That's too much. We got it. You don't need to be in there. But if you're going to be in there, you can't do that. Okay? You cannot lose your composure. Okay? Because we're Marines and this is part of our life. And so that's part kind of where the faking comes from. That's kind of where the faking comes from. And So, but it should not follow you home. And I say this in the presentation. I think that after you go through these traumatic events, you need intimacy more, right? And I don't mean sexual intimacy, although that certainly is a part of intimacy. What I mean is you need to, you know, sit next to somebody on the couch and feel them close to you, right? Or when, you know, you're sitting there reading on the couch or watching TV, you need them to plop down next to you, throw their leg over you, and be close to you. I think you need that. So the whole isolation piece, which is the enabler of destructive behavior, it starts with isolation. You cannot peacefully coexist with that. So then, as I kind of developed this thought, I tell the story of Allison, who I told not to have sex with her husband, and it was in that room that it happened. Well, that I met her husband a year ago. Well, not a year ago. What was it? It would have been 6 months ago. And so I tell the story, that story. And then I said, and so then, you know, when I got to the end of the story, and I won't say it's not the punchline, but it's the hook, right? The same heads turned, and now it was a full 90-degree look. And yeah, boyfriend, we got to go there. And you know what? And the truth is they do need to go there. So, but it was interesting to, it was interesting to watch. And, General Mullen came over and introduced it as he did in May. And he's been a huge supporter of post-traumatic winning, since he saw it at the General Officer Symposium. And so always appreciate that. And I mean, his story is powerful. It's powerful. It's interesting, just on a personal note, when people react to the stories that they see, it affects me. Like, I don't know if I can insulate myself from some of the stories in my life, and then when I'm telling them, but if I see somebody react to it, it affects me. It's kind of interesting. It happened to me again yesterday. And then the other really, really, really cool thing is always is at the end. When, you know, I mean, nobody's seen a presentation like post-traumatic winning because it doesn't exist. I mean, it exists one place. But I would say most people have these thoughts. They've been struggling with this stuff. And all of a sudden, you have somebody that's throwing the carcass in the center of the room and say, don't be afraid. Go there. And I had a whole series of officers and enlisted Marines come up, talk to me, spouses, wanting to connect me with other people, would you come talk? And so it's just, you know, it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I had dinner with somebody from the Secretary of the Navy's office who came down to see it. And I need to say this about General Furness's leadership. And I would say this whether we were friends or not. We happen to be friends, but that's not why I'm saying this. The data that comes out of the 2nd Marine Division, And I'll explain the data. They had another suicide over the weekend, past weekend. Their second suicide in almost 11 months. And they are down 4 suicides. They had 6 last year. They've had 2 this year. So they're down 66%. Everybody else in the DOD is up. So what grabs the attention of the Secretary of the Navy isn't that, hey, this great presentation, you know, whatever. It's the data point behind it. And so that opens the door. So, you know, went out to dinner and had a great conversation about that. And hopefully, post-traumatic winning not only will visit the Navy, but it'll visit not only will visit the Air Force, but it'll get a wider audience in the Navy. And the place I want to go that I said, look, let me go to the Reagan. They had 3 suicides in a week. And now they're dealing with the aftermath. Send me down there and then read the reviews when it comes out. I'll tell you what's going to happen. It's like, that's probably not a bad idea. And so, anyway, but my point about General Furness, what opens all these doors and what the attention gainer is the data point. The data point, the data point, the data point, the data point. That's what you know, oh yeah, this is great too. Like the last 7 things I heard, except when they showed up, they sucked. Yeah. And you hear Matt Kiker and you hear Sergeant Parker. They both say the same thing. I so did not want to go to more of that bullshit. And then I went and it changed my life. Now, again, that's a Lance Corporal at the time. Matt's since been promoted. Parker's a sergeant. He and all of his friends don't want to go to that shit. That's how much it speaks to them. So again, okay, yeah, this is the next version of that shit. Well, it's not. It's not. And, but again, the thing that door kicks it, the thing that opens the door is, the data that comes out of the 2nd Marine Division. So, I mean, I can't, General Furness and the Marines and sailors of the 2nd Marine Division, officer enlisted, the leaders and the individual Marines who have made that, you know, that who've embraced post-traumatic winning and help each other and talk. I mean, they are going to have a far-reaching effect. I spent probably 45 minutes on the phone last night, with somebody that F-18 man connected me to. And explaining the program to them, why I thought it was appropriate message for high school students. And she was really excited. She's going to talk to the school superintendent. They've had 3 suicides, I want to say, in the last either 3 months or whatnot. And they're beside themselves. Like, what do we do? You know, what do we do? And so she said, well, Mac, what do you do? What makes it different? I said, I tell them the truth. And if they don't like it, I don't care, but I'm going to tell you the truth of what it is to live with trauma. And that not only can you live a good life, you can live a great life. And she's like, I've never heard somebody say it like that. I said, well, and I said, look, and what I do is I combine 2 really, really strong brands. And that is, the brand of the United States Marine, not the Marine Corps. Okay. Of Marines, individual Marines who served. And this is the wisdom of Marines, not of the Marine Corps. Okay. So that brand. Combined with Viktor Frankl. And, you know, you can go look it up. And she goes, oh no. She says, I know of him. I've read his book. I said, yep. I said, so, and that's what post-traumatic winning is. She's like, wow. So, but again, that door gets opened by General Furness, with, you know, dealing with the Las Vegas Fire Department. They want to see it. And so, but again, the thing that, right, wrinkles their foreheads and furrows their eyebrow is the fact that it has data behind it. So again, yeah, and that goes through my head, you know, when I see, and you know, the other thing I think of general officers, I've talked about general officers, and I think the nation has a crisis at the general officer level in that they become conformists when they reach there, when they should be the exact opposite. They should not be afraid to speak their mind. I'm a general. Okay. You know, I'm gonna be true to myself. I'm not gonna accept all this, mitigate this, and be careful with this. I'm gonna speak the truth because that's what got me here. I'm not gonna do anything different. And so, have the courage of your conviction. And I thank God. And I'll tell you what, there's people on this planet right now that wouldn't be there were it not for the Marines of the 2nd Marine Division. So, hats off to them. Whitney Houston sings the national anthem. On this Friday, the first day of November. So, good morning to you. Honestly, good morning.
Who's
She's the best. And this is dedicated to friends of mine that I saw yesterday. And General Mullen, I hadn't met him until about almost a year ago at the General Officer Symposium. Jay Bargeron, who's a Brigadier General who runs Marine Corps University now. Jay and I are battle buddies from Fallujah. He was a regimental XO in 2006 when I worked in current operations, and he's a great guy. And then, this is also dedicated to the Marines of the 2nd Marine Division. And, God bless them. You should be extremely proud of the work that you all have done for the last 11 months, because it is opening door, it's changing lives, and it's going to save lives all across this country. So, this is dedicated to them. No, not that. All right.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech.
You know, that is the worst, though. And I don't know what happens if you get a tangled vocal cord, or I don't know what happens, but you're trying to talk your way through it. And most of the time you can, but when you can't, and you know you have to stop, you know, most of us fight it. You don't want to stop. And he obviously did and had to.
But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore. So young folks, you ignore what I just said.
That is funny.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness. Do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time for us to check the weather here on a Friday. The first day of November, straight up winter. You know what? I almost left California without my overcoat. I'm kind of like this cashmere. And I told the story earlier in the week, but I hadn't seen it in like in years. I found it, but it was all wrinkled. Like, I'm like, well, I can't take it get dry cleaned. So I got the lint roller out, right? Got all the dog hair and lint off it, and then fired it into the dryer. I'm like, we'll see if the dryer gets the wrinkles out. And it did. Yeah, it worked. Thank God I brought that thing, too. Denver was cold. Quantico's cold today. Currently in Quantico, partly sunny and 48 degrees. Down south in North Carolina, Camp Lejeune, it is sunny and 52. 29 Palms, sunny and 43. Pendleton, sunny and 46. Camp Smith in Hawaii, it is dark, clear, and 70, so they're getting cooler. In Okinawa, they've gotten cooler, too. Dark, clear, and 70 as well. In the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, sun setting earlier in the day, it is dark, clear, and 75. And in Lashkar Gah, in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, it is 69 degrees, dark, with partly cloudy skies. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is sunny and 48, so a cold night in Southern California. Looking for a high of 79 degrees today, 80 tomorrow, and 75 on Sunday. That is a look at your weather. When we come back, we'll check some news stories. Interesting story about Iran that kind of caught my attention. So we'll check that out. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to my dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
And her.
let me read you, because I've been traveling, my shithole weather updates have gotten few and far between, but, Chris in Webster, he remains committed to the program. So, let me get to Chris's update. Shithole weather is Oscar Mike. So, he's on the move. Position, Worcester, Massachusetts. Now, that's different from Webster, Massachusetts, all right? 48 degrees. Rapidly clearing skies. Winds are the story of the day. 21 miles out of the west with gusts to 30. Lots of leaves on the ground means yard work. This is bringing clearing skies and temps in the 50s for the weekend. Chris from Webster out. Yeah, that's the only one I got. It's tough, though. The president's going to celebrate the wife. He got heckled by the whole crowd, like, at the World Series that he went to. Lock him up, Chance. Yeah, funny. Trump to celebrate Washington Nationals at the White House on Monday. Ah, there you go. I thought it was going to go. There's a big parade, I think, in D.C. today. It's okay to hurt, man. It's okay to hurt. Yeah. Somebody sent me an email last night. Mac, I love the idea of your book. So do I. You know, if you didn't hear me talking about the book, the children's book I'm gonna write, and that's called Colleen Can't Forget. It's about a little girl who sees something. I'm not exactly sure what, but what I referred to is she sees something like a car accident. They drive by on the freeway, and she can't forget about it. And so her dad notices that she's sad, and he says to her, "Are you okay, Colleen? Why do you seem so sad?" And she says, "Daddy, I can't forget what I saw on the freeway the other day." And it begins this whole process of discovery for her. So, I actually included it in the presentation yesterday because I wanted to see, you know, where post-traumatic winning started and where it's headed. And so, you know, I had a picture of high school audience, and I made a cover. It's, I just pulled up some picture some animated picture of a little girl looking sad off the internet. And then I made kind of a cover of a book with the title Colleen Can't Forget. And I had, you know, a number of people come up and say, like, that is an awesome idea for a book. Because as a parent, you'd be lost. Like, what do I do? How do I convey this to my children? And all of a sudden you see a book that has this wonderful message in it. And so, yeah. So my book idea is getting good reviews. So, and you know, and they're like, well, you know, when are you going to write it? I'm like, I don't know, but I need to write it soon. And I need to write the other books soon. And again, they shouldn't be long books, in my opinion. They should be easy reads. And, the children's book, of course. And, so anyway, yeah, exciting news. Let me find the story about Iran. And, it had to do with, regime change inside of Iran. Yeah. And so if you notice, you haven't heard too much about Iran in the news recently. You know, there's an article last week or earlier this week. I can't remember. It was when I was home. So probably either Monday or last week about, you know, Russia and Turkey, you know, doing big things in Syria and Iran not at the table. Noticeably absent was Iran. And that, with protests going on in, Baghdad and in Beirut, people are unhappy with what the puppets, I don't know what you want to call them, what you want to call those people who are working at the behest of Iran, what the lot of the people that they're serving in theory, the lot is not improving. And so you have protests throughout the Middle East. And then there was a story that I saw last night. I want to say it was a Reuters story about regime change in Iran. I just saw a story that, where is this one? This is in Political. Syria's Assad calls on Trump to be more a more transparent president. Come on. Right? Where's the rim shot? Right? Right. Hold on. Let me just find the story. Iran, regime change. See if that gets me what I want. U.S. imposes new sanctions on Iran. That's 1 hour ago. I want to say it was... It was a Reuters story. Give me 1 second. I can't find it. I'm disappointed, honestly, bitterly disappointed. So we'll go to the headlines. We'll go to headlines in Stars and Stripes. Number one, North Korea says it test fired new multiple rocket launcher. Congratulations. Why is that the top news story? Must be a slow news day. In a military first, Army gives the Marine Corps rocket systems platoon a lift off Okinawa. Marine Corps in Okinawa is working to improve its ability to defend the southernmost islands of Japan, and the Marines' M142 high mobility artillery rocket system, HIMARS, is a key weapon. So the Army providing mobility, we love that. U.S. military team heads to Montenegro to counter cyber threats ahead of the 2020 election. That's interesting. The United States Navy wraps up 10 days of training with Brunei in the South China Sea. That's interesting. So anyway, not much in Stars and Stripes, right? U.S. Naval Institute news. The time change thing is screwing me up, just so you know. Yeah, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, I'm not like good with time changes. The remains of a World War II Coast Guard POW have been returned home after 77 years. The remains of Lieutenant Thomas Crotty are scheduled to arrive in his hometown of Buffalo, New York, 77 years after dying in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. You know, these stories are amazing as more and more of these of these remains are returned, in this case from Japan. And here's a picture of him, right, posing for a picture, right in his alphas, right? So he's got his dark coat on. He's got his barracks cover on, so the white cover with the bill. And he's standing there with the sound-powered phone in his hand like he's talking. And Japanese captured Crotty after the fall of Corregidor, where he fought alongside Navy, Marine Corps, and Army personnel in defense of the Philippines. He died on July 19, 1942, from diphtheria at the notorious Cabantun prison camp, about 85 miles north of Manila. He is one of 3,000 U.S. military prisoners who died at the camp. Lieutenant Crotty is the only known U.S. Coast Guardman to serve in defense of the Philippines. His service authorizes the Coast Guard to display the Philippine Defense Battle Streamer on our Coast Guard ensign. He was posthumously awarded the Bronze Star, Purple Heart, and many other decorations, according to Admiral Carl Schultz, the Commandant of the Coast Guard. He said in a bulletin. Schultz asked the entire Coast Guard to take a moment of silence at 1 p.m. Eastern Time yesterday, marking when Crotty's remains were departing for Buffalo. Funeral services are scheduled for Saturday at St. Thomas Aquinas Roman Catholic Church in Buffalo, with interment with full military honors at Holy Cross Cemetery in Lackawanna, New York, which is a suburb of Buffalo. He's a graduate of the U.S. Coast Guard Academy. He was the captain of the football team in his senior year. After graduation, he spent most of his career serving aboard Coast Guard cutters on the East Coast, West Coast, and the Great Lakes. In 1941, Crotty started training with the U.S. Navy for specialized service in mine warfare. In October of 1941, Crotty arrived in Manila. The Navy assigned Crotty to the Inshore Patrol Headquarters at Cavite Navy Yard for what he thought would be a six-month detail. And there's some pictures of it. Yeah, old, you know, pre-World War II American military bases in the Philippines. Instead, Japanese aircraft launched a surprise attack against U.S. military installations at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, bombarded U.S. military bases located in the Philippines, advanced, blah, 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 blah. So we know the rest of it. It's a really cool story, by the way. When he died, the prison camp was enduring a diphtheria outbreak. Crotty was buried in a mass grave with other prisoners who died on July 19th. After the war, the U.S. Army Quartermaster Corps exhumed the graves from the Cabanatun prison camp cemetery and attempted to identify the remains. The military tried several times in the late 1940s and early 1950s to identify all remains, according to the Department of Defense. However, discrepancies in the rudimentary camp burial records, a lack of dental records, and the condition of the commingled remains that were severely deteriorated after years in jungle soil meant investigators could not identify a significant number of the remains. The unidentified remains, including those of Crotty, were buried in a Manila American Cemetery and Memorial, according to the POW/MIA accounting agency. On September 10th, 2019, as part of an exhausted effort by the DOD to bring every service member home, Lieutenant Crotty was positively identified from the remains returned from the cemetery in early 2018, according to the POW/MIA accounting agency. And I can only assume that DNA had a role to play in that. And so, lo, all these years later, a Coast Guard lieutenant, by the name of James Crotty, comes home to Buffalo, New York. So cool story. And, I mean, I love these stories. And, you know, it teaches us, the price of freedom. And it teaches young people. You know, this kid went to a high school here near here. He was out serving his country. Blah, 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 blah. Another kind of interesting story, which is a glimpse into the future. Both the Navy and the Marine Corps are moving ahead with unmanned naval vessels. Yeah. You know, pretty soon it's going to be, you know, a swarm of drones And again, drones can ping, drones can get blown up. Nobody really cares about it. Right? Nobody really cares about it. You know, interesting story about the Secretary of the Navy, Spencer, and his ongoing discussions this week. And he's been very public about it, about the criticism the Navy's got about the Ford, the USS Ford class carrier. And he talks about, you know, the challenges and whatnot. So interesting article here. And again, it's a pretty complex issue. It has to do with the elevators, the new technology that they were trying to prove on the Ford, you know, yada, yada, yada. And the challenges that have become of it. And really, what happened was Huntington Ingalls Industry, the builder of it, they told them, yeah, we can get it up by September of, 2019, which means it'll be able to deploy in 2020. And then they came back, they said that in January, I think, and then they came back, in June. And said, no, there'll be, three of the 10 that will be functional. The next one, it will be 80%, and there'll be 7 others that will be non-functional at that time. You're like, what? And, I think the Secretary of the Navy has every right to be pissed. Well, again, and in Washington, it doesn't really matter because the truth doesn't matter, right? It should, but it doesn't. And so, interesting when you think of carriers and drones, right? Can a bunch of cheap ass, relatively cheap when you consider the cost of an aircraft carrier, can they destroy, right? If you swarm an aircraft carrier. So if you're a submarine, think about this. If you're an attack sub and you can get within, let's say, 100 miles of a carrier and you have a drone that has let's say you have like 30 drones. They're all warheads, but they're smart warheads. And you have 30 drones that you can launch that have a range of 150 nautical miles. How do you defend that against a swarm? Another interesting story by Megan Eckstein, who we're fans of. Marines in the Navy considering alternate amphibs to supplement today's fleet. Now, this is one of the things General Berger said. We got to be more flexible in our approach because we're not going to get the 38 amphibs we want. The Commandant's plan, this is the article, the Commandant's planning guidance has sparked several questions about the future of amphibious ship fleet. How many ships are needed? What kinds of ships and what role will they have? And while answers are still in development, the expeditionary warfare community has a lot of thoughts on the matter. During the National Defense Industrial Association's annual Expeditionary Warfare Conference last week, several panels and speakers addressed the idea of what comes next for the mix of ships in the amphibious fleet. Captain J.R. Hill, the Amphibious Warfare Branch head within the Expeditionary Warfare Directorate, OPNAV, blah, 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 said the Commandant's planning guidance discusses adding a new capability to supplement the current amphibious ships. The two services are happy with the America-class amphibious assault ship and the San Antonio-class amphibious transport docks as ship designs that will support their operations and now and in the future. But the service is also looking for something smaller than today's Whidbey Island-class dock landing ship, or LSD, but larger than a landing craft utility, LCU. To complement the America and the San Antonio class. So you have to know your ships in this. But you can see where Commandant's planning guidance is now beginning to manifest itself in discussions. Top story in Marine Corps Times today is the Marine Corps increases time and service requirements for sergeants and staff sergeants and revamps reenlistments. So that'll be interesting. A Marine has been identified. Seventy-five years after he was killed, He's a Utah Marine. And the headline says 75 years ago. The story says 76 ago. And you know, it's interesting. You see these stories. They're young guys. And you know, Marines had a lot of hair then. Marines have much less hair than we had in World War II. And they're standing in front of what looks like something for a mugshot because it has their height behind it. Right? 21-year-old PFC Robert Hatch of Woods Cross, Utah, was killed in November of 1943 after 3 days of fighting on a small island in the Pacific. Hatch was one of the 1,000 troops killed in the battle. Well, what battle was it, for crying out loud? They don't even say in the story. Shit. I'm looking at the story like I missed something. November of 1943. One of 1,000 troops killed in the battle. I guess I could look it up. Is that Tarawa? Anyway, let me do the top five stories in Early Bird as I get out the door today. So, well, the chef's going to show up, but we've recorded that, so I can go get on an airplane. Number one, CENTCOM commander releases video of raid on Baghdadi compound, which now looks a lot like a parking lot with large potholes. I don't think this has been updated. It hasn't. So there you go. That'll do it. Yeah. We're done. Don't touch that dial. The chef's going to join us next. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.